Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your 25 songs of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, Ben Ratliff. And you're hearing the song Curtains Closed from Predatory Headlights from the band Tenement, a record that came out, I guess, a little more than a week ago. It's a double album, 25 songs long. It's one of those records that I haven't gotten sick of yet. I've played it a lot, over and over, and I find myself more and more drawn to little details within the songs and still surprised by weird things that happen in strange places. And with me to talk about Tenement today are Liz Pelly, editor of The Media, which is an online newspaper.
Biweekly every other Friday.
And you can see it at fvckthemedia.com. You're also a music and culture writer in general. And Maria Sherman, you're also a music and culture writer. You've written for Fuse and Billboard, BuzzFeed, MTV. You've both written about Tenement. Tenement is a band that is generally the first thing people say about them is that they're a punk band, right? And then you look at some of the bills that they play on or some of the festivals they play at. You listen to their music, which has this like almost classical sense of pop songwriting. And then you compare it to some of the bands that they're associated with. If you don't know that much about their scene, you might get confused and you might say, what's happened to punk? Like, what is this band about? Is this punk? So tell us about the scene that they come from and the circuit that they come from and the little world that they come from.
I think Tenement comes from a really interesting pocket of the punk and or pop punk world, where it's pretty clear that for these musicians, punk is more of something that they relate to on an ideological level, or it's a way for people to communicate about the way that they interact with the music world, for bands to find each other and immediately know we're into DIY ethics, we're into these certain labels, we're into house shows, putting out music ourselves. And the relation to punk is more on that level versus the aesthetic or the influences that they're channeling. So it makes sense that for the punk world that Tenement comes from, that relationship with punk is always what's at the forefront versus the aesthetic of their music. Tenement, as songwriters, talk a lot about being inspired by jazz musical and classical and experimental sounds and rock in general. And I think that on records like this, that depth of influence really comes through. And I think there are other bands from their scene that also channel that sort of diverse
mix of things. Yeah. So we should say that Tenement is from Appleton, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. I don't think they still do, but they for a long time they lived in a house where they would throw shows. I think the house actually wasn't it torn down the day after they finished making this record or something like that?
The BFG house.
The BFG house.
That's what I read.
Yeah. So they live in the house. They basically have played along the circuit of, you know, living room shows, basement shows, that kind of thing, until more recently when a few more people have discovered them. And also their stuff, relatively speaking, was hard to get a hold of unless you went to one of their shows, right? I mean, like they started in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that early stuff just wasn't online for a long time, right?
Yeah. I read an interview with the singer recently that was from 2010 where he talked about still not having internet and how he just thought it was easier to burn CDs and mail them to people.
And which is how I discovered them. I got Napalm Dream in the mail and I was like, okay, maybe I'll listen to this.
Yeah.
It was because I was contributing to The Big Takeover at the time, mm-hmm. which is still in print. So I guess it kind of speaks to not having internet if you're learning about like punk bands, you're probably reading that publication.
Yeah.
To kind of go off what Liz was saying, a lot of your punk background comes out of necessity. You're in this like smallish town. You're creating your own scene. You're going to play with the bands that are willing to play with you. If you need a gig in Appleton, you talk to these folks. And I also think people don't give punk enough credit. I think the people making this music come from a much more diverse pool of things that they listen to. I know they have that record with Kulo, which is very much a hardcore band. They're like tough guys, studded jackets, all this stuff from Chicago. And you see them with a band like Tenement, who could like arguably be playing a small stage on Warped Tour. And I think a lot of that is just because there's a familial like love for what each other does, not necessarily some sort of like sonic similarities, which I think is more interesting than seeing the same band play five times. Or
well, so, I mean, the DIY scene in general is about relationships and making things special through the energy of those relationships. Like, so that's one thing. But what Tenement has been practicing up until fairly recently seems to almost go beyond that, no? Into some level of like Ludditeism or just like a mode of resistance. They're not ready to get fully involved in online commerce and getting their band sort of promoted to the next level or whatever. Do you agree? Or is it still just like, no, that's just not available to them?
I think that's still, you know, so much of being involved in punk and DIY is about creating your own world and not having to get involved in these bigger systems that to some people just seem like a bunch of noise. So I think that's probably why for Tenement for so long, they are an example of a band who would just prefer to stay out of it and do things on their own terms.
Yeah, I agree. It would be interesting to talk to them about this because I wonder if it's even like on their radar. Have they even like considered sort of sending through record or what have you to like a bigger realm of music writing or what have you, whatever you want to call it? I feel like they're probably just not interested in it. They're doing fine with their kind of weird asymmetrical selves.
I'm sure they are. No, yeah, but it's just there's something about it that still seems funny to me. Like a record of this accomplishment, you know, fans were saying this is their Zen Arcade, this is their Double Nickels on the Dime, etc. There's a lot of that kind of talk in punk circles, in all music fan circles. But it's kind of true. I mean, like, this record actually is cohesive. These songs come out as if they're all sort of connected. It's a real accomplishment. And yet, I'm hearing sort of silence around it.
Yeah, I think that kind of answers the question that you posed in your review when you asked, is this improbable or is this an accomplishment? I think that for a band like Tenement that has access to fairly small resources, they're not getting an advance from a label to take time off from their jobs to sit with this. They're not, you know, having access to the best recording studios or music school or composition lessons or whatever, to just on their own time and on their own accord say, we're going to spend several years learning all of this stuff and on our own schedule making something that's this much of a masterpiece, some people might call it, is pretty impressive and a huge accomplishment. And I think that there are a lot of other punk bands who over the years, like it's not anything new for punk bands to be interested in sophisticated composition of their records.
Oh yeah, right. That's true.
So I think for any punk band that puts in the time and energy to make records like this, it's always kind of an accomplishment and defies what people think you need to have access to in order to make really excellent sounding music.
Yeah, I think even just like the form of a double LP is so interesting because I was, before we were discussing this, I was thinking, what's the last like punk double LP I bought? And it was probably the Moss Icon reissue. Mm-hmm. And that was more of an anthology. And I feel like that's a lot of like how those records tend to live because they're expensive to make. And then, of course, if you're in a punk circle, they're expensive to buy. So the fact that they can just like tackle the form and then do it so well is astonishing.
And it took them a long time.
And it did.
More than 3 years, I guess. Mm-hmm. Well, let's hear another little snippet from the record. This is Predatory Headlights by Tenement is a record with a variety of different kinds of songs. Some are sort of tightly constructed punk songs. Some are that plus some other ingredient, and some are just sort of weird from start to finish and experimental and using a variety of strategies. So this is one of the weirder tracks called A Frightening Place for Normal People, and this is just a chunk from the middle of that track. So that's a piece from A Frightening Place for Normal People by Tenement from Predatory Headlights. So let's talk a little bit about like the matrix of punk slash DIY right now, the layout of it, you know, the different scenes that exist within it. It seems to me like there's a real multiplicity going on, different scenes that in different ways are communicating with each other. They're not completely cut off. They don't have separate audiences. And one thing that really brought this home to me was looking at the schedule for the Berserk Town Festival in Orange County in August. This is the second edition of this basically punk festival. But it's aesthetically really broad. And at the top, you have the reunion of Royal Trucks. I guess they're talking about that as like the headline. But then you also have Tenement. You also have Vex. White Lung maybe is playing. All these really interesting bands, Gun Outfit and Sheer Mag, and also then like really sort of basic negative hardcore bands as well. It's a real mix. I wonder whether you feel that there's this multiplicity and the way that they're communicating with each other, the way that they're being included in bills together. Is this something sort of new?
It's hard to say whether it's new or not, but I think that you're totally right in that a festival like Berserk Town really speaks to all of these different pockets of underground punk DIY music that are going on right now that are really intertwined. But also when you look at them, you also can see how there's the super politically engaged pocket, the super feminist pocket, the more pop punk oriented pocket. Then there's sort of like the Gun Outfit, Vex, Pacific Northwest, Olympia mm-hmm. pocket. There are some punks that are more art first, some that are more ethos first. There's the really intense hardcore bands. It's an interesting moment because there's all of these communities that are definitely in communication with each other and aware of each other, playing a lot of shows together. And there's a lot of conversations happening about, you know, not everyone would look at this lineup and think every single band on this fest is a punk band.
Right.
But people are having conversations about what that means. I think a really interesting or funny related anecdote on the media a few weeks ago, we had an interview with Gun Outfit that was done by a contributor to MRR. It was originally supposed to be in Maximum Rock and Roll, but their editorial board decided that it didn't fit the qualifications.
I saw that.
Punk scene
and
anymore.
I wondered about so that. Rejected by Maximum Rock and Roll.
Right.
So,
but
the media
there were people,
printed it.
Yeah, but the introduction on the media was written by one of the current editorial coordinators of Maximum Rock and Roll, and there are people there who really love that band, but to other people, they don't fit their definition of what a punk band is anymore. So I thought that was just a really good example of the just kind of shifting definition of that word to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is very interesting, and I do think it's probably a pretty recent thing, because before Berserk Town, like, I guess the annual punk festival you'd attend is Chaos and Taos.
Right.
And when that started, now it's defunct. It was mostly like grindcore local Texas bands, like maybe you'd get some people from Denton, and that's about as far away from the epicenters you would get. And then in the later years, they had Big Frida teaching bounce music dance lessons, and you would have like bands like Gun Outfit, and you would have all of these kind of strange sounds from all over, also not just U.S. based. I think we should point out that Berserk Town is also bringing out bands that are like half Australian, half like from Berlin. It's pretty unique in that way.
I remember a moment that was like, I want to say 3 or 4 years ago, when all of a sudden, well, a few hardcore bands started to get a little bit fashionable through associations with, you know, Odd Future or something in the media would happen. Somebody would get some love from Vice or whatever. Mm-hmm. And there was this new attention toward hardcore. Oh, there's a lot of hardcore happening. What's that about? And there were some skeptical people who said, like, I just don't get it. A lot of this music sounds like music that was made 30 years ago. What are people getting out of this, you know? So, and that was not a very interesting conversation to have, but it strikes me that maybe, you know, the proof that a tradition in music is sort of healthy is that it both, is that it's doing two things. It's creating interesting new spaces for, you know, political spaces or aesthetic spaces within it and around it, and it's protecting its own stylistic history, you know, and it has a sort of like stylistically conservative wing, if you want to put it that way, you know, that is actually making music that does kind of sound like the music of 30 years ago. Like that sort of has to be in place to some extent for there to be strength in the music and a future, maybe.
I want to say I agree for some of the bands that we could be talking about. Like, D-Beat's never going to go anywhere. I think the most exciting, well, one of the most exciting bands in hardcore right now is Glue from Austin. And if you're not a like an avid punk listener, you probably wouldn't know what time period that came from.
Right. You said D-Beat's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, it's here to stay or for a while. But is that good or bad?
I like how it sounds, so I'm going to say it's good. No, right. I think it's interesting. It's just kind of a foundation you can play with and get creative with, even if the drummer is just kind of doing the thing that feels familiar.
Right.
Let's ask the drummer.
Yeah. How do those drummers feel who are playing the same beat over and over?
It's pretty interesting, the conversation about Tenement, actually, because I just feel like for some people, the sound and the style of the music and changing it and making it more interesting just isn't necessarily what it's about, especially for political bands or for bands from which is a platform for just expressing ideas and plugging into cultural conversations, mm-hmm. and making people think about like lyrics and the message that their band is about. So for those sort of bands, I feel like the very backbone of punk is loud, fast, helps drive those ideas and mm-hmm. maybe necessarily right. doesn't need to change. But then, you know, you have bands that are just trying to, I don't know, not trying to prove, but I think that it's cool when punk bands can prove that with the tools they have that they're capable of doing something just as expansive as any other indie rock band.
Mm-hmm. For the more strictly politically oriented bands, you're saying that like this sort of loud, fast thing is just is the platform to get across the ideas, the representation, the lyrics more clearly. But then on the other side, there's these bands that are doing other things that are more about aesthetics, more about songwriting, more about sonic experimentation or whatever. Can they coexist?
Totally. And it's also not that cut and dry. You know, there are tons of bands in the middle who do really interesting sonic things whose lyrics are also extremely compelling. There's a lot of interesting bands doing the personal political lyricism that I think is also really important.
No, thank you
especially
for saying it's not that cut
with
and dry.
The
it's true.
Like feminist punk scene. And there's just a whole breadth of different types of bands operating on an underground level currently, always have been, always will be, subculture or underground culture, whatever you want to call it, like, I don't know, hasn't gone anywhere, isn't going anywhere. There's whole worlds within it.
Yeah.
And
bands kind of doing all of that and then like doing it in another language. Some of my favorite hardcore bands right now are like from Austin or LA, and they're like of Mexican descent, like Vasca and Caraca and Kira Torres. They do like a lot of the like hard, fast sort of stuff, and then they're more complicated elements, and you kind of have to read into it a little bit more, especially if you're not a Spanish speaker, which I think is interesting. And I do think it feels newer to me in that there's a lot of the best hardcore bands are female and Latina.
Mm-hmm.
It feels wrong to me to have a conversation about the state of punk in 2015 without talking about how Downtown Boys are the best band in the world.
tell us more. Why are they the best band in the world?
They are a band whose political platform is really important right now. They just put out this video a few weeks ago for their song called Wave of History that acts to connect the dots between slavery and the prison industrial complex and all of the like police brutality that has been in the news and in the history of our country. And they just, they're a very smart band with very important things that they want to say, and they do what they have to get their point across, and their live show is just next level, the best punk show that you'll see.
So if you could make a fairly realistic guess about what might happen to Tenement as a result of a record this good, what would it be? Within the next few years, let's say. I mean, are they going to be playing different kinds of places? Are they going to be playing bigger festivals? Is somebody going to swoop in and sign them? Would they agree to that?
It's actually hard to know because I don't really know. There are tons of bands who make excellent records, like the records that they've just made, but either choose to not engage with those systems or decide that they're willing to give up a little bit of their sense of control of the way they operate in order to reach more people, which is up to the artist to decide. I feel like if they wanted to, I could see them becoming a much bigger band, but if they decided this is the level that is meaningful for them,
they will continue on.
I could see them continuing on that, yeah. I also, something that I meant to bring up way earlier that we didn't touch on is that I think that there are other bands. I don't know. The first time I heard this record, I immediately thought of the Ergs because I thought that it really reminded me of that record Upstairs, Downstairs they put on. That was like, it was released by Don Giovanni in 2007. And it was kind of similar that they came from this.
It was also a double album, right?
That one, you might be right because it ends with a 20-minute song. It's like a 20-minute like noise collage. But, you know, also was pretty masterfully composed, and they brought in all these different elements of like jazz and experimental music and, you know, big sound collage at the end, but also came from a really strictly pop punk, Don Giovanni pop punk background. But that was 2007, and I feel like in 2007, punk bands didn't have publicists and Facebook pages and social media and stuff, and just the extent to which punk bands were engaging in these worlds was much different. The first time I heard it, I was kind of thinking about that and wondering whether Tenement's record would exist on the same level as a record like that Ergs record did in 2007, or if this was going to be an example of what happens when a punk band puts out an awesome, expansive record like this in 2015, and there's all blogs and PR and festivals around it and stuff.
Right.
So, so it'll be interesting to see what happens with the record and who takes to it and whether it brings this band to that next level or if it just stays.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of the dialogue with them, especially with their live shows, is like kind of going from playing with hardcore bands like Kula, who they released that album with, to playing with more like indie rock friendly bands. But then I was going through like shows that I've seen, and I realized they've never kind of adhered to sort of some linear music industry growth. I saw them play with Tweens and Vacation, another Wisconsin band, in 2013, which is much more like guitar rock. I don't know. There's some jangle in there. And then playing with Warthog, which is a New York hardcore band, last year. So I guess they're just kind of doing whatever they want to do. I guess when you're that weird, you get that freedom.
You know, I realize that we haven't talked about something kind of important. There's the punk tradition, which is such a big idea that it's almost, it can't be contained. But there's also a pop punk tradition. And Tenement could be described as within that, or they could be described as rebels against it, fighting against it, you know, sort of messing with it.
If we were having this discussion a couple years ago, like when Napalm Dream came out, I would say this is a pop punk band. Like, straight up, that's pretty much what that record is. And now that they're kind of like complicating that, I love and hate that genre term because I feel like it's getting to the point where like it's almost like an emo tagline, where if you're kind of prescribed this, then you have to carry it with you for the rest of your life. Not that it's a negative thing.
But is that why it annoys you? Because other people are starting to use it pejoratively?
Yeah, because if you're familiar with the Tenement and then I handed you this record, would you give it the same sort of time and consideration, or would you think this is something that is only available to people who listen to that type of music exclusively?
Right. Sure. Well, in my mind, pop punk, just the idea, comes with limitations. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there's a tradition there, and it's meaningful, and it has produced, you know, little masterpieces. I mean, I'm not wrong about this, right? This comes from Milo Goes to College, more or less, the Descendants record.
I consider them the first pop punk band, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
The historian has spoken.
No, it's interesting, because I feel like the definition of pop punk has changed so much since the 90s, early aughts, and there are so many different associations with it. There are a lot of ways in which pop punk has been commercialized and sort of attached to all these different, yeah, emo bands, like you said, and that's pretty far away from bands like The Descendants. Even some people, I think, would consider the Ramones to be one of the first pop punk bands. And I feel like if you're going with that early definition of pop punk, which is just melodic punk music that sort of tells punks that punk music can have melody to it, then I would say Tenement are totally a pop punk band. But because of the way that phrase has sort of changed or lost its meaning over the years, it's hard for me to want to call them that. I think of them more as melodic punk band, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I was reading this interview that they did with Megan Miner from Western Mass, where they just went on about the term pop punk and how much they detest the word, which I thought was interesting because I would have maybe predicted that, but also didn't expect them to reject it.
They can think whatever they think, but it is sort of like the primary starting place for a lot of their best songs. You hear the riffs, you hear the first 15 seconds, and you think this band, this guy in particular, Amos Pitch, knows what he's doing within that tradition. It's not just coming out of nowhere. It's coming out of something in particular.
Yeah, I was thinking about that a lot. I read part of that interview, so I didn't get to the whole pop punk of shaming. But I was thinking they released Bruised Music Volume 1, which I think they released earlier this year. Tenement did.
And which was their earlier stuff.
Yeah, which was their earlier stuff. And the first song on that record, it's probably Amos saying, like, you want to hear the best pop punk song ever written by Jesus? And then it's just, like, silly, completely silly tune. Like, it could be an Offspring song, for all I know. Yeah, but it's funny to think that that's where they came from. I feel like this rejection has to be, like, a new thing. Mm-hmm. Or maybe a rejection out of necessity to not be kind of pigeonholed. Because if this band is anything, it should be impossible to pigeonhole.
And it might inspire them to keep feeling that sense of wanting to reject the thing that they're related to, that they're coming from. It could give them energy.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll go out with one of the other tracks from Predatory Headlights by Tenement, the song Whispering Kids. And thank you, Liz Pelley. And thank you, Maria Sherman.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And that's our show. Thank you for listening. You can read my review of Predatory Headlights by Tenement at nytimes.com/music. Our producers are Tamara Best and Jocelyn Gonzalez. And you can listen to some of the bands we've been talking about, Tenement especially, on our Spotify playlist. See you next week.